Celeb Savant is a career retrospective type interview focusing on singers, actors, and industry experts. Join Barrett Edelstein now as he dives into the entertainment world.
André Lotter is a South African actor who obtained his national diploma in drama from the Tshwane University of Technology in 2008. His professional theatre debut followed soon after graduation with standout performances in productions such as Danny, the Champion of the World, Pippi Longstocking, and The Little Mermaid and The Jungle Book. His theatre credits also include Kreispat at the Grahamstown Arts Festival, Somewhere on the Border at the Market Theatre, the Baxter Theatre and the Grahamstown Arts Festival, Feti Feti alongside Tobi Cronier. He was also part of the touring production of Onderwereld. In addition, he performed in a series of plays written by Brian van de Pfeiffer, including Rolex met a K and Moort met a Tear. In 2022, he took on the role of Fenta in the award-winning Naledi-nominated production The Parrot Woman at the Market Theatre. André's television career includes a range of character-driven roles in popular soap operas and series such as Binnenlanders, Getrouwd met Rugby, Stelopers, and Villa Rosa, for which he won the Royalty Soapy Award for Best Male Villain in 2015. He was also a main member of the Seven Delaan cast for more than 8 years, portraying Rikus Wellman. In 2021, he joined the cast of Mnet's Legacy in a leading role as Robbie Hugo. His film credits include Asie Singh, D-Tat, and the romantic drama Eindelijk Nog Al Baie, in which he starred as the lead character Jay van Niekerk. Up next on Celeb Savant, live in studio at Solid Gold Podcast in Randburg, Johannesburg, South Africa, is André Lotter.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. Thank you so much.
Yes, I accosted you at the theater. So I'm like, I want to interview you. Let's do this. So let's dive straight in. André, at what age, whether it's a child or teenager, did you think, okay, I want to be in this acting creative world? And how did that journey progress?
So just as an interesting note, I wanted to be a professional rugby player. That was my dream since I was a kid. I was quite good at it. So that was a dream. I didn't, in primary school, what was it? Standard one. I did my first like a concert thing, but never thought anything of it. My marks were good. So I was going to be a doctor, lawyer, and then a rugby player. That was my plan. So when I went to high school, one of my teachers came to me and she said, listen, yeah, you're good at academics and at sport, but you have to do something culture, something drama or, and I was like, okay, cool. Let's try it. And I did my first play in grade 9. Standard 7, grade 9. Still, it was just fun, spending time with friends and the girls and all that. But in Standard 8, which was 2000, was the first time we did a proper play at school for the Arctic Affair, actually. And it was interesting. It was fun. It wasn't, yeah, we had a more of a character discussion and how rehearsals actually are. Mm-hmm. And that's when I realized it's something I enjoy. It's not something I want to pursue, but it was in Standard 9. 2001, we did a big, huge musical at school, and it's a big thing. You rehearse for 2 years, you dance, you act, you sing. We tour Cape Town, we perform at the Pretoria State Theatre. And that year, I decided, and the guy's actually in the industry, Barry Pretorius, he's a musical producer. He said to me, "You've got a talent for this. You should do it." And that's when I started thinking, maybe I can do this. Maybe I can do this. And Standard 9 and Matric, grade 11 and 12, I started pursuing it by myself. But I mean, I come from a family they don't know about the entertainment industry, and our school didn't really, we had drama, but not like it is today. I mean, the kids today have splendid drama coaches and drama courses at school. Mm-hmm. But that's when I knew it's something that I want to pursue, and it grew. It grew on me as I, for 2-3 years, because I only started studying drama at 21 years of age. So it was around about 2001 where I started realizing that this is something, yeah. And then thinking back when I was a child, I always escaped in an imaginary world. I mean, I grew up in the age where Arnold Schwarzenegger, Rambo, Sylvester Stallone, Jackie Chan, all those kinds of action heroes. And that was my escape. So when I realized this acting thing is something I want to do, still didn't know what it entails. I started doing my own research because I didn't study that at that stage. So I did a lot of, it wasn't really YouTube, but you're studying, reading up on it, asking people. I remember one stage in Matric, Brumilda van Rensburg. Mm. She came to our school one day and we had a discussion, just like an open discussion yes. about, and we asked her a lot of questions. And she said, it's a tough industry, but you gotta work hard. I wasn't that kid like you grow up, like I did concerts for my parents. It wasn't like that. So it was late in my life. Yes. When I was 17.
So you mentioned earlier that you had the idea of wanting to do it. You didn't really know much about it, but yeah. you did research. When you actually stepped into it and started professionally doing it, were there any aspects about it now knowing and actually doing it that surprised you that it's actually part of it that you didn't think would be part of it?
It's the amount of research that needs to go in it. When I was younger, you know, you watch movies and when I was very young, I didn't go and watch plays really. We weren't that kind of family. So I watched movies and in your mind, when I think back of it, you think it's just what they do. You know, it's acting, but you don't really know. So when I actually started doing, I actually went for an ad casting, and through the ad casting, the agency I was with at that stage, they sent me to Sevendalon as an extra, and there I met Henry Mong, who was the director of one of the directors, and it was a weird setup. I read a piece of text with him to do a small part on Sevendalon, but literally like a small, and he said, you need to go and study because you've got the natural talent. But the preparation, when I also did like a whole year course with him, like one-on-one acting coach, the amount of research and the amount of not just knowing your lines. And I've got a big thing about actors, just learning the lines. You know, it's about the story, the narrative, and then the psychology behind characters and people, because that's what people are. They are emotion, they are body, but they also experiences and psychology. So I think, well, at university, we did big plays, but it's the amount of research that And now it's the thing I love the most about it, yeah.
So how much research do you actually do for each character, or does it depend on what the character is that you're portraying?
Yeah, for me, it depends on the character. I draw a lot from the script, specifically about Soapy. You know, they tell you in advance, like Sevendalon, like we're going to do a cancer storyline, or we're going to do a psychological thing about for your character. So they give you kind of 2-3 months notice about what the storyline is going to be. And then I just go and research it because I think it's very important. So it depends on the character, especially when it's a character or a world that I know nothing of. Then I feel you've got to do extensive research. And I mean, nowadays you've got YouTube, you've got documentaries, you've got so much content that you can consume to be able to know the world of a character if you play a sociopath, or if you play a killer, or if you play a lawyer. Yeah, for me, it depends on the role. I want to understand the world of that character. And I know a lot of actors say, you know, they don't want to over-prepare, but I think that the base research of your character, besides knowing the line and the actual story that they're telling, that base is for me extremely important because it makes me more comfortable. Theater I love more because you get time to really research. With TV, day to day, it's like maybe you can go into Google and research a scene or a setup. But I think it depends on the character.
What do you love about acting and portraying different characters?
For me, it's about exploring different characters. I live my life as Andren. I've got certain experiences and but I will, at the end of my life, because I'm an actor, know so much more about people because I've studied multiple characters, multiple life's emotions. And it's interesting for me when I start studying a character and I learn about myself, you know, because sometimes, like I said, you don't understand that world of the character. You go do research, and then I find how would I react to that situation. So I love exploring people. It definitely made me more observant of people around me and situations. I can sometimes sit at a coffee shop and just watch people and see how they interact. And I don't always really focus on it, but sometimes it catches your eye and it goes into your bank, and later you're like, you can use that. So I like exploring people's lives and emotions and psychology behind it. I like that. And then obviously when you're in the scene or shooting the scene on stage, and you really, and it sounds a little bit indulgent, but when you feel that moment, when you feel you're connecting, that to me is, it's like, euphoria. It's crazy.
Let's first go into theater. You referenced earlier that you love theater. What do you love about theater?
That live interaction, whether you do comedy or drama, you know you are engaging an audience. Also, that slight nervousness of you can't say cut, I need to do it again. Can I do it some other way? Look, you've got a couple of rehearsals to really get to a character, but that live moment with your fellow actor, finding the moments, and some nights, not changing it really, but finding other moments and growing each and every night. That to me is what I love about theater. I think it's that you can't mess up everything that you've prepared and that you've done and rehearsed. You need to do, and I hate the word perfection, but you need to hit the beats. And when things go a little bit south, you need to find a way. Yeah, it's a nice challenge. I like that about theater.
I've heard that word before, beats, when it comes to acting. What does that mean?
Beats for me specifically, it's about where your character changes gear, changes emotion, because any scene or any play in any movie is written in beats, and beats is what keeps the audience engaged. And so you come into the scene and you're like, hi, Barrett, how you doing? Cool. And you hit me with some information and that's shocking to me. So that's a beat.
Okay.
And then it changes my perspective, my thought pattern. And then from there on, the story unfolds. So that's beats. And I like working on those beats. Yeah. I mean, you have to. You can't just skip over the beats. When you skip over the beats, for me, it becomes then you miss the story. A good writer writes in beats because he knows where to take the audience on the journey. And a good director and actor will obviously identify those beats. Emotional beats, psychological beats. Sometimes it's just a pause. A lot of times on soap sets, you'll just hear, just pause. It's not anything in acting. It's just for the camera. So that also in terms of television is beats, yeah. It's a very important thing.
When you say that, in my mind, I see a book and each beat is a chapter.
Yes, that's also.
And that directs the story.
Yes.
Yeah, so that.
Yeah, a chapter can be a beat change. And also within the chapter, there are different changes in emotion, tonality, speed, pace, whatever. Yeah, those are the beats.
Now, you guys perform on theater 6, 7, 8 days a week. Sometimes it's a couple of weeks, sometimes it's a few months. Yeah. The audience goes and sees one or two shows, one or two evenings. For you personally, in your experience, how do you maintain body energy balance during a hectic schedule like that?
Look, I did the Parrot Woman at the Market Theatre in 2022, and that was an 8-week run. When we studied, we learned about stamina and how to, because an 8-week run, 6 shows a week is a long time. So for me personally, I just need to stay fit physically. So you know, you the fitter you are, the more you can do on stage. No matter if it's a very physical play or, and then I specifically in times when there's a lot of performances and rehearsals, like I'm currently doing, I do a lot of meditation. You've got to release what you do there, specifically when it's an intense story and world you create. So when it's an 8 performance, I like to take an hour of the day before I go to set or to theater to just meditate, maybe watch a sitcom or stand up comedy show just to, you know, de-character and debrief. But it's important to meditate, to stay focused. And before I do the show performance on the night, I do a lot of warm-up, voice warm-up. I do a lot of body warm-up, stretching, because you have to be present. And it's like when you go and play rugby or cricket, you can't just go cold onto the field.
Yeah.
You'll get injured.
Yeah.
And it's the same with acting for me. It's like you've got to, even when I do TV, it's about warming your voice, because your voice is where your emotion comes from, and you got to draw what they say. You got to go over the footlights to reach the back of the audience.
Yes.
So for me, and diet, I mean, it is so important. I've heard too many actors that don't really eat, or they possibly drink too much, and you get fatigued in the show, and it shows. And I mean, throughout my life, I've been healthy, tried to train in that, but specifically when it's a theater piece. And now I'm doing something that's very, very physically demanding. So I jog, I row, and I do voice warm-ups like you can't believe. And then focus, like I said, meditation. I think there's a lot you can learn from yourself in that stillness, because my mind can sometimes race, specifically when I'm doing a play. I think about it all the time. Even when I'm not on stage, like just on a normal day, I'm like, oh, I'm thinking about stuff. And then you can sometimes miss the relationships.
Yes.
And it's when it's an 8-week run, it's an 8-week run. And I know American actors, when they do films, they're like, for 6 months, they just that character. I don't vibrate with that.
Yeah.
That for me feels like you can do it better. You don't have to become complete.
Yeah. Yeah. Your body is, and your brain and your mind has theater, as you know, it's projection of the voice, the movement for the back of the audience. And then with the television and the movies, it's about making it smaller. Mm. Does your brain sometimes take a moment once you've been doing lots of theater or vice versa to get back into the conditioning of the other role?
Definitely. Yeah. Yeah. I've been doing a lot of TV, with Sevenon specifically, and then Legacy. And that was all in all 8 years of television. And within that, those 8 years, I did maybe 2 plays. And then when I went back into theater, it took me a while because not that theater you don't internalize, but you play, like you say, you play it small. So it takes me some time to stretch that muscle again. Mm. And you'll hear sometimes theater actors say that when they haven't done a theater play for a long time, you get fatigued easily because you want to play it close. You want to play it small. So I definitely, when I juggle between the mediums, I have to retrain my brain, retrain the whole system to know that with theater, you still have to be true to the story and the emotion, but you have to a zoom lens. You just have to zoom it from yourself. And you have to use that instrument, the voice. Luckily, when I studied theater. So you did a lot of voice work, a lot of body work. And that actually, when I finished my studies and went into TV, that was a difficult jump because the first TV audition I did, the director said, I can see you're a theater actor. And I was like, what do you mean? He says, you're very expressive and your voice is there, but the mic is here. The person is here. And so that transition took a while.
Okay.
It took me about a year or two to know how to contain it for the television. And then I fell in love with it. But still, it's a jump. It's a cognitive jump you have to make. Every time when I go into rehearsals or I know I'm going to do a play, I need to retrain my voice to really project. And that first week it gets fatigued, but then it kicks back in. And the same now, I'm rehearsing a theater play now, and I did callbacks for a television thing, and also the director constantly reminded me, you have to just bring it down, bring it there, just do little less. And I was like, oh. So it's sometimes a struggle, but you got to focus on it. You got to work on it. It doesn't come, for me, it doesn't come naturally. Like I have to focus on it. Okay, cool. Now I need to be there because it is different how you pitch it.
Let's move into the movie and television world. You've been in long-running characters or shows or series, and you've also been in sort of shorter arcs, movies. For you, what's the difference between being in a movie where it's a shorter character, shorter portrayal, so to speak, because it's a feature film, compared to being in Steven Alon for 6-7 years?
Yeah. My first long TV show I did was Villa Ruesa. That was a year and a half, and I remember sitting there in the green room before we went on. And my script, it looks, it's disastrous. It's scribbled and underlined and highlighted. And there's a lot of, because that's what I studied. You analyze the character, the scenes, objectives, beats. And one of the actors said to me, looked at my script and he said, that's not going to last. You're not going to do that because it becomes tedious. And this is just a day job. And I'm like, it can't be a day job. It has to be your passion. It has to. So my mindset always, no matter if I do a long running show, look, you get, what's the word? You get complacent sometimes in a long running show because, suppose let's take Sevenon. You're a lead character, but you don't get storylines every day.
Yes.
So when you get a storyline, I take that as a movie, a short film or a series that I'm doing. And it's 3 weeks, 4 weeks, 5 weeks where my character is an arc, the A storyline. And I need to like the cancer storyline or the fight club or plane crash, whatever. So I treat that as a movie. But that in between, those filler times, months, because your character can't always be in a storyline, you just go and get coffee. But I feel you still need to be present and learn. And I found that specifically that first 2 years, when I'm not really in a storyline and I feel myself possibly getting bored, which I never did, I then focus on other stuff. What does the crew do? What does the director do? How does the camera script look? What does the cameraman do? What sound? So I learn a lot because I also want to be a director. So it's just constant making sure that you don't get bored because actors do get, they do get bored, specifically with long running soaps. And when we finished Villa Ruesa, I actually showed my last script to that person. I said, look at that script. I still do everything that's scribbled because you do get actors, they pick up the script, they learn the lines because your short-term memory gets very quick, very, very quick and absorbable. So you can quickly learn the lines. I mean, I can learn lines now and shoot a scene and it can be edited and aired. but there won't be levels and stuff like that. So for me, it's constantly, what does the script say? You've got to go back to the script and work on it. Even if it's just a couple of underlining words, because that keeps you engaged in the story. Because a lot of the extras around specifically soaps can get you distracted, because you do interviews, you do magazines, and people kind of see you and want to give you stuff. And I think that is a very thin line that some actors need to walk, because then it becomes about that. And you often see that specifically with soaps, it becomes about that. It doesn't become about the story anymore. Where in a series, you shoot, if you're lucky, over 3 months, then it's an intense 3 months of focus because your schedule is hectic. With a soapy, I might shoot a full day today, but tomorrow I'm off. So it's a very, it's easier. With a series, if you're one of the leads or supporting, you shoot every single day. You can't be off. So your focus is completely on that journey. A film, if you're lucky, you get 4 weeks. I shot a film in 2 weeks. So you occupied. And I tell my wife and friends, for 2 weeks, when I shoot a film or I'm in an arc in a story in a series, that's what I do. Without becoming, but you've got to keep focused on that the entire time. So it depends on the medium that I'm doing, but you gotta just stay present and keep yourself interested in the script. And if you're not in a storyline in a soap, learn what's happening around mm-hmm. you. You can learn a lot. I mean, when I was on Sirenon, there was moments where I wasn't in a storyline. I was just filling in the back and chatting to people, but I learned so much about camera angles. So before the director even said, this is going to be a cut or a two shot, I know it. So you fall into it, and then you become a little bit easier to work with, because it is a difficult medium to understand if you don't focus on that. So that's how I kept myself engaged the whole time, and not to get bored. Not that I ever had, but because they really kept me busy and see them on.
There's a stigma on soaps internationally, American soaps, British soaps, that, you know, they're cheesy, that the actors can't act, you know, all these stigmas around soaps. And actually, they work damn hard. Soap actors work damn hard.
Very hard.
I know. So I'm a soapy freak, and I had up until they canceled the actual physical copy, I've had a subscription to Soap Opera Digest.
Oh.
Where it was Days of Our Lives, Bold and Beautiful, Young and the Racist, all the soaps. And they sometimes film 3-4 episodes a day.
It's tough.
In one day. But it's hard work.
It's a hard medium. It's a hard medium in the sense of it's constant. And I mean, when you do theater, you rehearse, you can try, you edit as you rehearse. When you do a soap, it's a 12-hour day. You get there at 7 o'clock. You get your makeup done. That machine, the system is so perfectly tuned that if you, as an actor, don't fit into that rhythm, it's going to be tough. If you don't know your words, if you can't take direction on the spot, if you can't handle props, if you can't get direction on the spot, they say, listen, now you need to drink because of the beat, because it's all about beats and camera angles. And I've seen some fantastic actors that are really brilliant on a soap set struggle because of the pace, not because of their talent.
Yeah.
It is a different skill. So you've got to, I learned quickly, and luckily that first year before I studied drama at TUT, I did one-on-one classes with Henry, which is a soapy director.
Yeah.
And he taught me all about this, about the workload if you want to go into soap. And, yeah, it's intense. It's daily. And I've seen it with, when I was in Sirenon, after the third, fourth, fifth, sixth month, you kind of get used to the pace, you're in it. It's like you gym. You
yeah.
get fit, you do it, you pitch up. But then you get actors that come in for a story arc, and they want to create art, and there's no time for that. You've got to bring your best, and there are directors that really, you know, challenge that. But it's about getting it in the can.
Yeah.
You can't drop too many scenes. And I've seen actors like, what, really? And it's to find that fine balance between I need to stick to the pace, but within that pace, I need to bring my A game.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, there was one of our lecturers also said, we studied theater, but a lot of you are going to go into soap. And you might think soap is tedious and you don't pitch up the one day because you've got a permanent contract. You know you're going to be there for the next year. So you come and you just half-ass it. But there's one director that watches that episode and like, he's not a good actor because you're not there. You can see it.
Yeah.
So I had that in my mindset, like, you've got to be there every single scene. It gets tiring, but it's that fitness. And like you said, it's so quick. Some actors can't Some actors really say, I don't want to do soap because it's too quick. It's too fast. But again, I've seen soap actors that started out in soap and then did theater and film that are brilliant because of their work ethic.
Yeah.
And because of the pace. Now you take that pace, you put them in a series of a film and you just breathe the time a bit. And now all of a sudden you get rehearsal time, you get discussion with the director, and then you blossom, or they go to theater. By the first, third, fourth day, they know their words. Now you can start playing. So that's also a benefit of soap actors, good soap actors. And when I studied, a lot of our theater, people that studied theater went into soaps instantly, because soap at that stage was huge. Seven Lawn, Benelander started. So it was a lot of good actors went in there and then juggled between theater and television. So yeah, it teaches you a work ethic and a stamina that you, yeah, it's hard to keep on, to keep by sometimes.
There's been a lot of discussions that producers, specifically in Hollywood, are now asking for simplified scripts because people are so busy on their cell phones while watching television and movies. Now it's becoming the second screen.
Yes.
What are your thoughts around this topic?
I think we got to adapt. My hope is, like Leonardo DiCaprio and all those guys, they keep film happening. And I think that medium shouldn't go. The long form, I saw one battle after another. That kind of film needs to stay. But I think also there is something in, like you said, the small screen, that quick consumption. But for me, I force myself at least once a month, twice a month, to watch proper art films or go back to the classics like Godfather. I watched The Godfather the other day again. I watched the Pianist. Those kind of movies, just to bring you back to, for me as an actor, to stay there. As the consumers out there, I'm not sure, because if you're not a real film lover or theater lover, that's your first introduction to entertainment. It's going to be difficult to push them back to put them into theater, to put them into watching these epic films or classics. That worries me a bit. But I think there's no way we can stop it. We just, as artists and producers, need to find a way to merge the two, to educate the viewers that don't know about these epic films, that don't go to because a lot of cinemas are closing down now, and it's a problem. But again, Netflix gave so much opportunity to a lot of filmmakers and companies and actors, which is also a good thing. But then you get a lot of dead weight as well. It's a very tough balance to create. I mean, myself, when I'm bored, maybe half an hour a day, I will go into TikTok and scroll, you know, just aimlessly, just to see and have fun. But I've never been part of, I haven't yet been part of anything like that. So I'm not sure how I will fit into it as an artist. When you say about simplified scripts, there's something in simplicity, I think, but we can't trim the fat too much. And that essence, that fluff, the muscle of good film and good soap and good television, it should remain. Yeah, and we should fight for it. We as artists should fight for that.
Yeah, but also I agree with you. Not only that, though, when those people go to theater or those people go to movies, don't take out your freaking cell phone and start looking at your phone in your theater.
Exactly. Yep.
That drives me insane.
Kills me.
I'm like, say, put your phone down. Yeah. Put it away. Like, it gets me.
It's a short.
So disrespectful.
It is. Yeah. Yeah. We need to educate them. I know. Article Fit, I do a lot of tienertoneel, like school theater, adjudicating and stuff like that. And that's a nice concept because you're cultivating an audience from a young age, from standard six, or actually from grade 4 or 5, they start doing it. So that's a good tool to still educate the youth, because they are on their phones, they are on this quick consumption, but they still do theater. They learn about everything about the theater. We need the same for film. Like Leonardo DiCaprio and Tom Cruise and all those people, they say there's a fear of it dying out. I mean, in South Africa, you don't have premieres anymore. You get a movie, it's a quick, small thing. Mm. Okay, there's no funding really, but it's not that thing anymore. Where in the past, it was, this is a film. It was shot with a crew.
Yeah.
It was shot over 4, 5, 6 weeks. It's a big thing. They make something out of it and the marketing behind it. So I think because of the need to create content, that started happening. It's too quick scripts. I mean, a good script, a good film script specifically should at least be in writings, draft after draft after draft, more than a year. You can't write a script, shoot it, edit it, and air it within a year. That's, I don't know. It happens, and there's a space for it. Producers or whoever's got the money should focus on trying to keep that thing going. I think in America, they still do it where there's a lot of, there's writing like workshops. You develop scripts. It should be here as well. We've got the Silver Scarum and stuff like that, but it's also very condensed. It's very short. It happens within the year.
I know it's all very secretive in your world. What can you tell us is coming up?
I can actually tell you what's coming up. I actually asked my producer and he said, talk about it. So there's, for me currently, there's two things coming up. There's Afrikaans series that's coming out on CakeNet. It's a romantic drama. It's got me, Riandi Gray, who also was in the Seven Lands. She played Esty. Bobby van Jaarsveld is in the show. So it's a nice cast. It's a romantic thing about family, about relationships, about choices. And then I'm part of an intense production. We're in rehearsals now. It's called Nobody Told Me. It's about the Warsaw Ghetto, the Holocaust. And it's based on true events. Luke Albinski is the writer of it, and his mother was actually in the Warsaw Ghetto. She was a kid while she was in there. And the story is about her, but his grandmother, who was a surgeon, a doctor, together with other doctors that helped people out of the ghetto, false papers, not to be taken to Treblinka. So I'm part of that production. It's a beautiful cast. It's me, Liesl de Kok. Damon Berry is in it. And yeah, it's going to be at the Theatre on the Square from the 27th of January to the 7th of February. It's going to be big. And we're bringing in a lot of Brechtians. So it's a lot of, it's intense. We had 2 weeks of rehearsals now. The first week was just research. Because, I mean, what I know about the Holocaust is only what cinematic history and cinema gave me. So now we were forced to really study that material and what happened. And that's why I said I'll watch The Pianist again about the Warsaw Ghetto based in it. Mm. Documentaries. It is intense. So we've got a short run, and I hope people will come and watch it. It's going to be intense.
Locally or internationally, top of mind, 5 actors that you have as yet to collaborate with on screen in the theater that on your bucket list to do so.
My bucket list, and I don't think it'll ever happen in South Africa, will be Marius Vaes, but I don't think he's acting anymore.
Okay.
I would have loved to work with him. I'm putting it out in the universe.
Mm.
I want to be in 2 directors' productions, Guy Ritchie
mm-hmm.
and Martin Scorsese. I think the worlds they create is fascinating for me, and I think I'll fit into that world and style of acting. Those are directors that I want to definitely collaborate with. I think I would love to play opposite Emma Stone one day. That would be something amazing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, in South Africa, there's a couple of people actually that I would really like to work with. Sandra Prinsloo. I'm lucky enough to have worked with Tobie Cronier quite a couple of times. So that is, I mean, he taught me a bucket load on comedy and stuff like that. And then a production, I don't know if I'm too old now, a production that I still want to do is Streetcar Named Desire. I saw a national theater that got a production now, and Ben Foster played Stanley Kowalski with, was it Anderson, Gina Anderson? I think she's Blanche. That's a production I would love to do one day. Yeah. Be a proper Tennessee Williams Streetcar Named Desire. Yeah.
Okay, so let's put all of that out there and step into it.
Yes.
Except with Marius, but maybe.
Yeah, I don't think that'll happen.
But let's see. Let's put it out there. So, Andre, the podcast is listened to throughout the world. As a final message, what would you like to say?
Enjoy art, watch movies, and just love each other, man. Don't hate each other. There's so much of it going around in the world now. And like I said, while I'm doing this play, you see a lot of hate throughout the centuries, and my brain can't comprehend why. I know why, intellectually I know why people do it, but just love each other, man. We've got so little time on this planet with each other. We are so diverse, so different, and that's the beauty of it. I mean, it's a cliche to say we're different, but I think that is what needs to attract us to each other. The difference, like I said, when I see characters, I want to learn about it, and it inspires me, it teaches me a lot, and makes me grow as a person. So just love each other, man. Come on.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Celeb Savant. Please follow Barrett on TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook at Celeb Savant. That's CelebSavant.